There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
April Fool's joke, Dad, I'm pregnant. I think I didn't realize the extent to which he would, like, freak out.
Yeah.
I didn't understand, like, men of that generation the way I do now.
Oh, this happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe I've grown up into less of a dick.
That's good.
Yeah.
Aliyah Pabani, you are the host of The Imposter. You're the new host of The Imposter, but the first host of The Imposter, really.
Well, let's see how things shake out at the end of the day.
No, you're going to host the damn show. I'm actually afraid to talk to you right now. Last time I did like an hour with Chandler, who was the first person who was supposed to host the show. And we talked about her personal history and her hopes and ambitions for the show. She was very charming. And then somebody offered her a better job.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard it. It was great.
So let's not do that. We're very, very happy that you're doing this. We didn't want to just be like, well, who's our second pick? So we went back to the whole audition process.
I don't know if you noticed this, but I actually came up with the idea of one of the hurdles as a joke.
You did?
Yeah. I said when I was leaving our like casual coffee chat that we had,
yeah,
that as a kind of final round, you should have everybody fight to death by interviewing the same person and just see who interviews them better. And then I got an email saying, would you like to do that?
I have this bad habit of thinking things were my idea.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to that.
So how was the death match?
It was great. It was a really great experience.
We threw you into this like small studio with a strange man you'd never met before, and you had a lot of confidence and curiosity, and then you tried to bribe him within the first few minutes.
I don't remember that. What
yeah,
did
that
I say?
Happened. we'll play it
roll
someday.
Tape.
I think that's quite enough. People are going to have to listen to the show if they want to hear more of you.
Great.
When is the show launching?
The show will be launching mid-July, barring some accident or a better offer. And
we have a contract.
So July 13th is the date that we've set. And
oh, that's it. Don't like leave any wiggle room. Okay. July 13th. That's when it's happening.
That's when it's happening.
And then, yeah, we're going to do bi-weekly over the summer.
That's correct.
Are you into it? Are you excited? There's not really much choice. You have to say so, even if you're, you know.
I'm so excited.
Yeah?
I couldn't be more excited. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Are you serious?
I mean, it's the best thing that's happened this year so far. But let's see what we get.
Thing.
Like, let's see what we get. We're like halfway through, so a lot of things can change, you know.
You give me the sense that you just know what you're doing.
So I just pretend.
I'm sure you'll fool everyone. Where can people go to subscribe to The Imposter?
If you want to subscribe to The Imposter, head over to CanadaLandShow.com and you'll see a very prominent article about our new show featuring an image of me lying down in a parking lot.
In your pajamas.
In my pajamas. Well, someone else's pajamas.
And I didn't know that.
If you go to that article, you'll find a link for the podcast in iTunes. And if you're anti-iTunes, you can subscribe via the RSS feed.
Just in case we are not putting enough pressure on you, we are also doing a live taping of The Imposter. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that's something I'm super excited about. It's going to happen at the beginning of August at the Gladstone Hotel on August 3rd. And we have a bunch of acts already lined up, and we're still kind of trying to figure out the other ones, but it's going to be great. There's going to be comedy. There's going to be live performance. There's going to be me staring out into the audience wearing a nice outfit. So if you'd like to attend and meet the show and meet me, tickets are only $10, and you can find tickets via our website.
There's not a ton of seats at the Gladstone. We want this to be an intimate event. Aaliyah.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of you. There are few things that are more terrifying and exciting than what you're doing now. Like starting a new show, you don't know what it is. You've got all these ideas and ambitions for it, but you've never heard it before yourself, but you know everyone will love it. You only get what's in your head out to everybody. I just like I'm watching you kind of go through this process that is somewhat familiar for me, but I haven't done it in a while. And I'm jealous. Like I just am so excited. I think it's going to be so wonderful.
I am too.
Gerson of the National Post.
Also known as one of the chief jackals among the pack.
We're going to talk today about Brexit and how that was covered here in Canada. We're going to quickly talk about the horrible, horrible media layoffs this week and a secret event that I attended. We're going to talk about this Amanda Todd story. Welcome back to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thank you for having me.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Alroy Fonseca, Paul Merriam, Josh Harrower, Adam Day, Jeff Wanamaker, Tony Wallace, Kenneth Cronin, and Sam Pinto. Sam, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because Canada Land keeps me entertained on my walk to school.
Jen, this episode is also brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're at home in Calgary right now, but you are very, very pregnant. Is that accurate?
I would say, like, I'm moderately pregnant. I'm, like, I'm sticking out a bit, for sure. I'm pretty monstrously adorable, and I've discovered that this allows me to get away with no end of mischief and mayhem.
After a day of mischief and mayhem, of pregnant mischief and mayhem, you really do need to have, like, the best mattress you can get. I mean, your bed is going to become increasingly important in your life. Let me mansplain this to you. It's,
Tell me all about being pregnant, Jesse Brown. I'm really curious.
All about your mattress needs. Casper has just, they've solved this problem. They have brought the price of a very good mattress way down by getting rid of various middlemen, including those ridiculous showrooms. They provide an obsessively engineered mattress, Jen, at a shockingly fair price, combining springy latex and supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface. I need a mattress that wins awards. I don't know about you. It has just the right sink and just the right bounce. I do sleep on a Casper mattress. I vouch for this quite genuinely. I love this thing. And they just ship it to you. They send a box to your house, and it's completely risk-free. You just, like, slice open the plastic casing, and voomp, the mattress comes out. You try it out for 100 nights, risk-free. If you don't love it, they pick it up. They take it back out of your home. They refund you everything. Jen, I know this is important to you. Casper mattresses are made in America.
Why would that be important to me?
I don't imagine that it would be, but it's something that I'm supposed to tell everybody about Casper mattresses. Here's something that might be important to people who are thinking about a new mattress. You'll get $50 off of their already very low prices if you go to casper.com/CanadaLand and use the offer code CanadaLand. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks, Casper. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand.
A truly historic day. The United Kingdom has voted to leave the European Union.
The aftershock of Britain's vote to remove itself from the European Union continues to ripple through the country and across Europe.
What does it all mean for Canada?
Canada has always had a close connection to the UK. Does any of this affect you?
Does it affect us? What does this mean for Canada? What does this mean, Jen? What is Britain's exit from the European Union mean for Canada? And what did you think of the Canadian coverage of Brexit?
Well, sit down. As your, you know, go-to expert on trade relations, Brexit, and the longstanding Britain-Canadian relationship, I'll be happy to explain everything that this means for Canada and how it will all pan out over the next, you know, 3 to 30 years.
Wow.
No problem. I'll get right on that. Look, I mean, the truth of the matter is, I think that nobody really knows what this means just yet. It will certainly mean a lot of short-term instability, both in the markets and politically. I mean, we've already seen that with Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn sort of being asked to resign, losing the confidence of his cabinet, and then saying no. And David Cameron throwing his hands up in the air saying, I'm out. Boris Johnson, likely the next PM, having no apparent plan for what to do now that they've won. So I think we can safely say that all of Britain's in chaos. But, you know, how that's going to affect Canada in the long run, whether it's going to benefit us or hurt us, how we're going to get caught up in these sort of trade shocks. I mean, no one can predict that. No one at all can predict that.
Why don't I tell you what I gleaned as somebody who does not pay very close attention to this? So I was really experiencing this for the first time when the news broke.
Sure.
What I got from the Canadian press was, like, to summarize, holy shit, this is really, really bad, and it's a bunch of old racists' fault.
Yeah.
So the sense that I got was like, just to kind of expand a little bit, that Britain has shocked the world by moving against the arc of history, against modernity and humanistic trends towards inclusiveness itself, and because of some ill-informed old rural Brits who only had the chance to make this vote because of really self-serving political machinations and short-sightedness by David Cameron. As a result, not only is the UK fucked, but everything's up for grabs right now, and the world is going to degrade into a series of like feuding nation states if Europe was ever anything. But this will now be formalized, and we'll see secessionist movement after secessionist movement.
Well, I mean, the key statement there is if Europe was ever anything but, right? Yeah, that is the easiest possible hot take that you could come up with on 5 minutes after reading a couple of pages of The Economist. The idea that all of 17 million voters voted to leave the EU because they were stupider and racist, more racist than us, not only makes us as Canadians feel great because it bolsters our own totally cosmetic liberal sense of self, but at the same time, it gives everybody a very, very quick go-to column hit that they need to get in their papers for the next day.
But is it not accurate? Isn't that kind of true?
It's not that it's not accurate. It's just that I would say that it's just really, really simplistic. Trying to reduce any shift or vote like this down to the most self-serving, simple explanation that you possibly can. Look, I understand that impulse and that instinct. I just think it's not very useful. And I think that it probably contributes to the sense of polarization that politics in the U.S. and to a far lesser extent in Canada deals with right now. Look, when you can just say that the people on the other side of the breach are stupider than you and racist and wrong and just dismiss them as that, you're missing an opportunity not only to talk to the other side, but to persuade the other side. And if I think that there was actually a failure of the Remain campaign in Britain, it was in failing to address some of those racist attitudes head on and failing to address what were actually legitimate concerns about immigration and migration into their country. By reducing that side of it to just, well, those people are bigots and racists, so we can ignore them, they actually gave that side an enormous amount of power, an enormous amount of political leverage that eventually won.
It's so easy to just think about Trump supporters or gun nuts or Brexit Leave supporters in a certain way. I just get curious, well, what would they say? I know what everybody on my Facebook feed says about them, but like, how do they justify supporting this stuff that just seems so stupid? And I actually found it difficult.
Yeah.
To connect with their point of view, not to understand it, but to find their point of view.
Yeah.
And somebody was actually sharing on Facebook an open letter to Facebook saying, why are you keeping me in such a bubble that I'm just getting echo chamber results of everybody who agrees with me? I want to know what the Leave side has to say, and I can't find it.
Or even better yet, you see the way that the Leave side is portrayed now after the referendum. Well, these people were just, they didn't know what they were voting for. Did you see the Google results after that? These people were all just too ignorant. They didn't understand what was, yeah, 17 million British people did not vote to leave the EU and then not know what they were voting for. You can't take like an anecdotal man on the street interview taken from London Heathrow Airport about someone who was like, oh, I didn't know what I was voting for, and extrapolate that to 17 million voters. That's dumb.
Wasn't there some more scientific, I for some reason, 30% is the number that comes to mind. Somebody told me, oh yeah, 30% of the people who voted leave didn't think it was actually going to happen. I don't know what sample group or methodology was used.
Yeah, what sample
that's
group,
in my
what
head.
Methodology, and not only that, but how do you prove that? And not only that, but I mean, the other thing is, yeah, of course there's going to be a buyer's remorse after a referendum or a vote like that. That's normal. That's to be expected. I mean, if Britain had voted to stay in the EU, you know, you could just as easily have found those anecdotes from people who had buyer's remorse, who said, well, I voted to stay in, but now that I'm really looking at it, I changed my mind. I don't, you know, you would expect the Google results to be questions like, what is the EU the day after that referendum, regardless of what the actual outcome had been? There's actually a lot more going on here, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in Brexit or anything like that. I think Paul Wells did an excellent piece and started with listing a bunch of facts about the EU, and if you can't answer 3 out of 10 of them, then shut up. And I think he's about right. I think there were legitimate concerns about the EU, and I think that how it works, how it functions, how migration works, how immigration functions within that union, you know, some of it was racism and some of it was actually legitimate concern. There was a lot of not only racist sentiment, but just straight up nativist sentiment, a sense that, you know, we as a nation are losing our identity as Britain, and how do we hold on to that because that's something that we value? Well,
tomato, tomato.
No, but how?
Are those really separate impulses?
Potentially.
Xenophobia,
oh, yeah, you're going to tell me on the eve of Canada Day that nativism isn't a present in Canada as well? That we don't have a sentiment of Canadian identity that we value and find useful, and is that necessarily racist or xenophobic for us to have that sentiment? I mean, we can have that debate and that argument, but I'm not quite sure it holds up. You know, and if you also look at some of the particular propaganda that came out of the Leave side, and don't get me wrong, I'm no great defender of Leave. I think this whole thing has been a giant clusterfuck. But, you know, I think there was a BBC article that said that the single most remembered fact, the single most remembered thing about the entire Leave campaign was a stupid bus that had plastered on the side something to the effect of, we give the EU £350 million every day. Why is that money not going to our National Health Service? So it had as much to do, I think, with the financial ties. It had as much to do with sort of individual sovereignty ties. It had concerns about, you know, the meddling of Brussels, the meddling of regulations, the over-regulation of trade. And then you had a sentiment there that was outwardly nativist and a sentiment there that was certainly very racist as well. But then even within the racist sentiment, I think you had an element of legitimate concern about migration and immigration and Britain losing its control over its immigration policy. And, you know, how much of that was racism and how much of that was based in legitimate fear. I mean, I
think that there's a difference between being overly simplistic and reductive, as you're suggesting, and losing sight of the forest for the trees. You're parsing this out and you're saying it was very complicated. It's always very complicated. There's always a lot that goes into it. There's always somebody who can mount some kind of irrational sounding-ish defense. But doesn't this ultimately boil, like, isn't it just what it is? Not to provide a reactionary hot take contrarian opinion to your reactionary hot take contrarian opinion about other people's reactionary hot take contrarian opinions, but like, they're shutting the borders. That's what the overall overriding sentiment was. This hasn't worked. We don't want you people here anymore. We don't want to give you our money. We don't want to give up our culture. We want to close the doors. We want to be the way it was in the old days. Wasn't this the old generation, the whiter generation, saying, let's go back to some imagined romantic past, basically doing about face as to where we thought we were all heading together? And I mean, I just felt very sad after it happened. I felt like this was a really dark day for like human history, not to overstate it, but like,
well, let's have that conversation from a Canadian perspective, shall we? Because I think Colby Kosh's column on this was actually a very, very pointed, and he made some excellent points as well.
Colby Kosh's headline was, Britain voted for Brexit because it wants to be Canada and we hate the idea. Or at least his editor's headline for his piece.
Yeah, well,
Britain wants to be Canada and we hate the idea.
Look, have you read the piece?
I've read the piece.
Because I hate to break it to you, but what those leavers all voted for was pretty close to the model Canada currently has with the US.
Yeah, but there's a difference between leaving and never having. You know, there's always
yeah,
breaking
but
up
you,
a relationship.
You're sitting here getting sad about the loss of young Britain's mobility rights, for example. And I'm sad about the loss of young Britain's mobility rights as well. I think I've got friends in Britain, and it's really sad that they're not going to be able to work in those 28 countries and the opportunities they're going to lose. I'm empathetic to that choice, and it's not the choice I would have made myself. But at the same time, we're two Canadians. We're stuck in Canada. We can't easily work outside. We live in a country that has closed borders, that has a points-based immigration system that's very similar to what the leavers would have Britain adopt. You know, you and I can't go pick up and go work in New York or Guadalajara. We can't. And if we were to actually propose some kind of North American union where you and I could go and do those things, who do you think would be crowing bloody murder about it?
Our parents.
Our parents would, absolutely. They'd be like, you can't. No, we're not gonna let you create an economic and political union that allows our children to go work anywhere in North America, because they'll just clear out of our country and they'll take all of our education and our resources with them, and they'd be bloody right.
Would you vote for that though?
Sure. Wouldn't you have to go work in New York? Of course I would.
I'd like to have the option, I guess.
I'd vote for that in a second. And this is why if I were in Britain, I would probably vote to remain, because those are fantastic mobility rights for people like you and I in our 30s who are mobile and able to pick up.
Okay, so we agree. It's dumb old people that did this. We've come to a consensus.
Would that kind of an economic policy be good for our country? That is actually the debate that needs to be had here. I mean, Christ, the EU controls what? Most of Britain's food regulations, food controls. Here in Canada, we have a conversation about supply management, and all I get is a Facebook feed inundated with people warning me that if we dismantle supply management, we're going to be inundated with poisoned American milk. I mean, we have one of the most parochial, insular, closed off economic, political, and immigration policies you could possibly ask for, and yet we're then criticizing Britain for trying to create exactly the same thing that we currently have. I mean, you're going to tell me that right-minded liberal Canadians would be super happy if our immigration and migration policy were dictated out of Washington? You're going to tell me they would sign up for that en masse? I don't goddamn well think so.
All I'm telling you is that I find it really, really adorable and strange that your Facebook feed is filled up with supply chain management extremists.
You joke, but I'm not kidding. I have a lot of very, very passionate wonks in my Facebook feed.
Jen, I would like to duly note that this was a particularly shitty week in a year or a decade of shitty weeks for the Canadian media. Global News' investigative news magazine program 16 by 9 was canceled. It's one of the few, I mean, it's an old format, but they actually like invest a lot of time and money in doing investigations. They've done wonderful work in the past, even though they've censored some stories that they shouldn't have, but that came from management. Anyhow, they won't be censored anymore because they have been canceled. They're gone. And the investigative journalists who work there are all gone as well. And BuzzFeed, grand opening, grand closing, BuzzFeed's parliamentary bureau is done. And Emma Loop and Paul McLeod, who did some really good work in a year or so there, BuzzFeed has basically, Paul's going to Washington, D.C., and I don't know what Emma's going to do. She might severance out. She hasn't said. But BuzzFeed no longer has a presence in Ottawa. So there's that much less journalism in Canada this week.
And that is very sad.
It is very. You know what? I'm gonna once again break duly noted format, and I just have to tell you about where I'm coming from this morning. I was at a strange thing this morning. I mentioned this last week on the show. I was invited to, like, apparently the Liberal government, the Heritage Ministry, has asked this, Ed Greenspan used to be the editor-in-chief of the Globe and Mail. He's now running this think tank, Public Policy Forum, and the Liberal government, through the Heritage Ministry, has asked him to figure out recommendations, research, a report on whether they should, like, bail out the news media because of all this failure of the news media. And so he's going about this, like, multi-city process of talking to all the stakeholders in the media about what we want. And Canadian Press reported on this. This is basically like, should we get handouts or not? Should we get protectionist policies, subsidies? And I was invited, and it's all under Chatham House rule, which means I can't tell you who said what or who was even there. But I can tell you that this was the Canadian media. Mm-hmm. And so I can tell you that it was... Do you remember The Godfather when all the five families get together and carve up the future of crime?
Oh, God.
So I was there, and
did someone wind up with a horse in horse's head in the blanket? I mean, was it you? Did you wake up this morning and scream? Was that what you're going to tell me here?
I have never felt more sheer, unadulterated hatred directed at me than I did from one particular individual at the, like their face just twisted into a rictus of scorn and loathing as I was called a booby.
That is basically the Canadian media equivalent of finding the horse's head inside of your blanket.
That's it.
Being called a booby, followed immediately by an unwarranted apology.
I'm going to keep on. This was so bizarre. I just wish never before have I been more tempted to go back on my word and tell you who said what. I can't do that. I will tell you some of the things that were said. And this is by very powerful people who are like have a lot of say over what happens in Canadian media. First off, there was an ugly moment where people like it was mentioned that BuzzFeed had you know, killed their department. And they were referred to sarcastically as BuzzFeed, one of the saviors of Canadian journalism. And then everybody laughed. Which I found a little bit ugly. One person said that millennials' heroes, of course, are Gloria Steinem and David Suzuki. That was
wow.
That.
Gloria Steinem's been out there for a while now.
You know those millennials and their Gloria Steinem fixation. There was the old canard, we are training a generation to believe that content is free. What this country needs is a public conversation about why you got to pay for content. So that's like a 10-year-old thorn in the side that it, like if they're still hung up on that, my God.
Stop using the gerund form. No, it trained. It's done. The thing's over now.
Yeah, the horse is out of the stable, genie, bottle, toothpaste, all of that. Somebody actually suggested that like we do a licensing scheme like there is for music with journalism. Like, you know, SoCan, every time you play a song, there's some pennies go into some fund that when we share stories on the internet, like somebody should figure out a way to make sure that, oh my God, Jen, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. I am very pessimistic about the future. I mean, I think it'll all work out in the end. But I kind of feel the same way about journalism as I feel about Brexit. like the short term is going to be awful and chaotic, and in the end it may lead to a total devolution of society and nothing more than the warring tribes continuing to chlop each other's heads off as they have traditionally in the past, but you know, it may also turn out to be fine.
Duly noted.
A court in the Netherlands has ruled the man accused of cyberbullying, Amanda Todd, can be extradited to face trial in British Columbia. You'll remember the Port Coquitlam teen took her own life 4 years ago after being humiliated online.
I guess I wanted to touch on the Amanda Todd story because even now, all of the headlines associate her with cyberbullying, the man accused of cyberbullying her or humiliating her, we heard there. The charge is not cyberbullying.
No.
Okay, this guy faces 72 charges. He has been charged with extortion, internet luring, criminal harassment, and the possession and distribution of child pornography.
Yep.
This is a guy who has allegedly broken well-established laws, criminal laws, where he convinced a minor to expose herself, took a picture of that, blackmailed her, said, give me more pornographic material or I will expose this to your friends, exposed it to her friends. So now I think we're in the criminal harassment territory.
Mm-hmm. And she was 12 at the time, let's also point out. She was 12 at the time she exposed her breasts. So this is well within the realm of child pornography.
These are horrible crimes. They're well-established crimes. They were carried out through the use of technology in a really alarming and horrible way. But there continues to be this really, I would say, dangerous blurring of what happened when her social circles responded to this and she was ostracized and ridiculed and had such a difficult time amongst her peer group and that kind of, oh, that's the bullying, that's the humiliation. No. That followed a methodical, predatory series of alleged crimes.
Yes.
I think we really need to bear that in mind. We need to make that distinction.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are going to have the same opinion on this one. And I think that there is a temptation here as and elsewhere that when something awful like this happens, we look around and we say, oh my God, what policies aren't in place that could have prevented this? What laws aren't in place that could have prevented this? We look for these sorts of broad solutions to these horrible, horrible crimes. And our temptation always seems to be, well, let's create a new law. Let's create a new policy. Let's create a new government, whatever, to try and prevent this. Oftentimes skipping over the fact that we already have the laws in place to prevent this. We already have the tools in place to prevent this. This man just broke the law. And he broke the law egregiously and allegedly repeatedly. So, yeah, I think that there is a real problem with the cyberbullying laws as they've been brought in. They're very vague. They're very open to interpretation. There is an absolute concern from my perspective that, you know, increasingly bad but non-criminal behavior is going to get criminalized. And who's going to get fall into that trap? And for really what end? You know, what are you preventing here? I think that what happened to Amanda Todd was awful, and it very clearly falls under the rubric of exploitation, luring, and child pornography. I mean, why do we need additional cyberbullying laws? And would those have actually prevented this? Would those have actually addressed this? I mean, is a cyberbullying law going to do more than a child pornography law in this case? Absolutely not.
Rehtaeh Parsons was a case that actually did result in a cyberbullying law that I think has been struck down. Mm-hmm. These are hard cases. They're outliers. Hard cases, as the saying goes, hard cases make bad laws. And if there was a concern that this was going to be an epidemic of these extortion, luring, child porn, harassment, like it hasn't happened. This is years ago now.
But we also have, we've got the tools the Netherlands are dealing with. Like they have the tools already to deal with that.
Yeah. The guy 72 charges before brought to justice. So I think that there is something to be said for the technology progressing faster than the cops.
Granted. Like, yeah. And as I said, I'm not opposed to changing laws so that those laws keep up with where the technology is at. And I think that we have to be responsive to that. But on the other hand, you know, we got to balance that against not creating laws that are so broad and so vague that people start falling into this limbo of abyss or getting criminalized for just what is essentially bad behavior as opposed to criminal behavior.
Yeah. The part of it that just breaks my heart every time I hear the story and watching that video again is, okay, there was a criminal scumbag in the Netherlands who did this. That's awful. I hope that if he's guilty, that he spends the rest of his life in jail. I really do.
Oh God. Yes. Yes. Please throw the book at this guy.
That would be great. What happened to her at her school and then the next school she went to, he followed her and he wherever she went, she couldn't escape this guy. He would post the picture to every peer group. It didn't have to be that big a deal that he had a picture of her topless, you know? And if anything can change, maybe it's not the law, but the culture amongst young people that this says something so damning about her. That the internet has a picture of her topless. You just feel like there was some other way that this could have played out. There was some other message she could have gotten from her peer group or somebody within that world. It just seemed like she faced such a unanimous chorus of condemnation and humiliation and scorn. And that actually, I think, is what, you know, that's what young people care about, is what their peer groups have to say about them.
Well, let's not pretend that that's a young person thing, right?
Yeah. Right.
Let's not pretend that scorn and judgment and these types of attitudes, particularly for female sexuality, is uniquely confined to the lives of 15-year-olds. I mean, that plays out in adult life as well.
Yeah, and I think that some of the same people who I think sneer at the concept of there being a rape culture are the same people who would embrace tougher laws about cyberbullying. This seems to me a cultural problem.
Yeah, and I think that laws are oftentimes not the best way to address cultural problems. Laws are very, very effective at certain things and prohibiting certain types of direct behavior, but they're not necessarily the best way to fix, you know, really what comes down to penalization of female sexuality. Although even in this case, that's not applicable because we're talking about, you know, a 12-year-old who was coerced into showing her boobs to a man online. So, I mean, it's not even a conversation about female sexuality. It's actually a conversation about coercion and manipulation. And actually, as a society, we're very bad at that conversation. And again, this isn't limited to just 12-year-olds or 15-year-olds. Even in the adult world, we are very, very bad at understanding the subtle psychological dynamics that underlie coercion and manipulation. You know, there are people who prey on other people and they prey on young women and they prey on other types of women. And I think that oftentimes we as a society don't have a very good understanding of how those dynamics work and have a tendency to punish women who get into bad situations. And I think that, you know, Amanda Todd was that was a case of young people acting very stupidly and very inappropriately. But, you know, those types of attitudes are pervasive throughout the culture. It's not just young people.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me at any time. I'm at jesse@canadalandshow.com. And we are on Twitter @CanadaLand. Jen, where can people find you?
Twitter @JenGerson.
Our website is at CanadaLandShow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. Subscribe to The Imposter, hosted by Aaliyah Pabani. You can do so right now via our website or on iTunes. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. Syndication of Canada Land to community and campus radio across this country is handled by Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to CanadaLand.com/join. And thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.